This is Like Mind, Like Body, a podcast about the surprising ways our thoughts and feelings can impact our physical health. I'm your host, Laura Sago, and on each episode, I'll speak with researchers, healthcare practitioners, and ordinary people who have incredible stories to tell about the power of the mind-body connection. As always, this podcast is brought to you by Curable. The Curable app provides a step-by-step chronic pain recovery program right in your pocket, complete with bite-sized pain science lessons, brain retraining exercises for cultivating safety in your body, and much, much more. You can try Curable out for free by visiting curablehealth.com. Today on the show, I am joined by Camille Lewis, a licensed marriage and family therapist who works with clients from the Pain Psychology Center in Los Angeles. Camille brings a unique blend of skills to the chronic pain world, including a focus on sex therapy and a specialization in people whose identities are marginalized or oppressed. Our conversation spans all of these topics and more and includes lots of specific guidance and exercises that anyone can do at home to validate your experience of pain, cultivate resilience, and find new and exciting ways to reconnect with your loved ones. Let's get to the interview. Camille, thank you so much for joining us on the show today. We are really happy to have you here.
Thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to talking with you.
Of course. So you are a marriage and family therapist practicing in Los Angeles, and you work with clients for a variety of different reasons: relationships, sex, identity, and also chronic pain. And you happen to work directly with the Pain Psychology Center, which many of our listeners are already familiar with our friend Alan Gordon there. So tell me a little bit about how you became interested in this area and working with people who are experiencing chronic pain and symptoms.
Sure. So I definitely was a chronic pain sufferer myself throughout different parts of my life. And I think once I recognized that this was a need that folks were looking to talk about and discuss, and recognizing my own personal experience and the want to be a support for people in this community, I thought that it was a really great place for me to kind of reconcile those needs and those desires. I think working with chronic pain allows me to bring in kind of the physical experiences of patients and clients, as well as the mental and emotional experiences. So I think that's kind of where I came from.
Yeah. So another reason that you work with clients or that clients seek you out is to do deep work around identity. And this is a topic that is highly applicable to folks with chronic pain and can also be very tricky, because when someone has been in pain for years or maybe even decades, it has the tendency to unintentionally seep into the identity and how we see ourselves. So how do you see that showing up in your clients with chronic pain and kind of impacting the way that they view themselves and their identity?
I think that something that really comes up for folks is how they used to see themselves, like, kind of quote unquote pre-pain. So what the things that were that they used to be able to do and be involved in, how they might see themselves as maybe like a mother or a teacher or a spouse or an athlete. I think that we get really wrapped up in the ways that we have relationships with others in the world. And so when chronic pain is introduced into our lives, then we feel a loss of our central core, feel a loss of who we are. And that can be really challenging to overcome and navigate, because there's a sense of grief, maybe some hopelessness that goes along with that, and a shift in how you perceive yourself and maybe how others perceive you as well. So I think identity plays a huge role in what goes on for folks with chronic pain.
Yeah. So at the start of pain, and once you're kind of realizing that you may not be as much of those other roles that you previously were in your life. There's almost this identity crisis that happens, right? Which I think is what you're describing. Then you kind of see later on, after people have been in pain for years, that almost starts to become a part of who they are too. And then in the healing process, that can be almost difficult to let go of, because anything we identify with is difficult to let go of, right? Whether it's a positive part of our identity or whether it's something that's holding us back. Is that something that you've noticed in your clients, and how have you been able to work through that with them?
Oh, absolutely. Especially for folks who have been in pain for so long, that becomes so much a part of who they are. So they get used to turning down invitations to do things with friends or social gatherings, and their friends might get used to being like, hey, like, it's, how's your back today? Do you think you can go on a walk with me? How's your back? Do you think that we can do this? How's your knee? So I think that that becomes part of your community as well. And so you kind of see yourself as somebody who is in pain. And when the healing process occurs, it can be kind of hard to let go of, because that pain, as unpleasant and uncomfortable as it is, it might have like this secondary purpose where it can keep us comfortable. It can keep us maybe at home. It keeps us from having to be in uncomfortable situations. So sometimes when it's like, oh, wait, so now I can go out to any restaurant, or I can go on a hike or do all of these things, I can travel again, like, that kind of can feel scary when you've excluded that from your life for so long. So I think that that's definitely something that I work with, to acknowledge that as identities can shift and change several times throughout the course of our lives, and to try and not bring in shame around it and not to judge it as much as to acknowledge what is, and all the benefits that can go along with that.
Right. You bring up such a good point about other people asking, how's your back? Can you do this? How's your neck? Can you do this? It's almost like the first question that anyone asks you if you've been dealing with this for several years. And then I've spoken with several people during their recovery process, and they almost start to avoid social contact because people start asking them about their pain symptoms, thinking that they're being considerate, because that was exactly how they were taught to respond before. And now they're like, well, I don't want someone asking about my pain all the time. I don't want to talk about the pain all the time. I'm on this journey of recovery, but I also don't want to launch into this whole spiel about my journey of recovery every time someone asks. So what do I do? And then they find themselves in a really difficult situation there too.
Yeah, I agree. It becomes kind of like a part of how other people see them. And so then it feels like, okay, well, I don't want to go into a social situation because maybe I don't want to launch into where my progress is and how I'm feeling today. Maybe I just wanted to come out and have a drink with friends, but other folks are wanting to be considerate or hoping that they're being considerate. So it can be kind of difficult to manage. And I think that it's also acknowledging that, like, you get to set boundaries around the discussion that you have around your body. And that goes for pain, that goes for kind of weight, appearance in any type of way, and be like, hey, like, I'd rather that we just focus on blank or whatever is happening here, because that's what I came here for. That feels exciting to me. So why don't we talk about that if you're feeling anxious about talking about your pain?
I think that's such a beautiful way to treat it. It's light, it's easy, it's just a quick boundary set. Hey, I'm here for this. I'd like to focus on this, instead of having to explain yourself or justify yourself or go into a soliloquy about what you're trying for your pain. It's as easy as just saying, I showed up to catch up with you. Right now, my pain's not a relevant part of that. I'd like to focus on what we're doing here and what's going on in our lives right now. So I think that's such a great light way of changing the conversation without it being this big burden on the person in pain. So you work with all kinds of clients, but you do specialize and seem very passionate about working with anyone who has been oppressed and marginalized. And I want to follow up in just a moment to get your advice on how to navigate the healing process when you've been oppressed or marginalized. But first, I'd love it if you could speak directly to the link between chronic pain and the experience of being oppressed and marginalized, because those two things are more intertwined than most people realized. So what do you believe is the connection there?
If we're conceptualizing of chronic pain as kind of like these danger signals that are going off and telling us that we need to be in fear or telling us that our body's not safe or the world isn't safe, that's going to be, that experience is going to be exponentially compounded by marginalized or oppressed identities. If you feel like you can't be safe driving, walking, sleeping in your bed, then it's going to be really challenging to feel safe in your body. For if the world just seems like an unsafe place or a cruel place, if you have had experiences with racism of any sort, homophobia of any sort, transphobia, ableism, all of these different things impact our nervous system because they keep us on high alert. They have us looking out for where we are and where we're not safe. If you're going to a party, are there going to be people there who look like me, who can affirm me, who can support me? And even that question of having to do that constantly, if it's in a job setting or a social setting, or you're just running errands, that is going to take a toll on your nervous system in such a way that ramping up makes you more likely to experience or interpret pain where you might be actually perfectly safe.
Yeah. So what's your best advice for someone who really is feeling the experience you just described? Where do you even start to try to make yourself feel safe and start healing physically and emotionally?
Mm-hmm. First, I think a really important place to start here is just to acknowledge that that is real. Because I think acknowledging that there is a direct link between feeling unsafe, feeling like you can be targeted for any of your marginalized identities is a real thing that actually happens. It's not something that you're making up. It's not something that you're being overly sensitive or dramatic about. It is real and it feels like a threat. So I think that first acknowledging that, like, this is a valid experience that I'm having. And as a result, now I can attend to it. If I'm not even acknowledging that it's real or that I deserve to feel scared or hurt or offended, then it's going to be harder for me to attend to it through any type of lens, through danger or safety or otherwise. So I would definitely say validating it first. And then also, I think building community is incredibly important. As human beings, our relationships are the most integral experiences that we have to just being a human being. So if you feel like you have a support system where you can talk about the ways that you feel like you have been oppressed or targeted or mistreated or abused, that you can feel affirmed in that. You can talk about that without judgment, without having to kind of justify your experiences. Then you can feel safer and you can feel less isolated. And isolation is something that really impacts you and your well-being and your healing. So building community with folks who can affirm, hey, like, no, you're not being dramatic. This is something real. And I'm here with you. And we can talk about how to make each other feel safe and feel good and feel loved and beautiful or what have you.
Yeah, I think that is an extremely powerful place to begin the healing process. And I love what you're saying about really just validating, no, this is real and this is having a physiological impact on my body and it's nothing that's my fault. That can go such a long way because without acknowledging that, how can you justify to yourself taking all the time for the self-care that you need if you're not even acknowledging that this is real and that this is something that merits attention and merits an outlet and merits community? So really, really powerful place to start.
I think you definitely kind of hit the nail on the head there, where it's just kind of like, if I'm not acknowledging that this is real, then it's going to be harder for me to resource myself. It's going to be harder for me to say, okay, this is what can be contributing to my pain or my discomfort. If I am not even acknowledging that, like, I get to be upset by this, I get to be hurt by this, and I get to be scared, whatever comes up is legitimate.
Yeah, there's a quote I love on your website, actually, and it says, taking care of yourself is a resilient act, one that requires vulnerability, rest, and compassion. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, I think that taking care of yourself and self-care has been kind of like these hot button words that have been thrown out lately. And I'm really grateful for that being brought into kind of the our world and our vocabulary. And I think that it's also, we kind of get programmed or socialized to believe that we just have to keep going. You just have to power through. You just kind of have to like grin and bear it. And I think that that's just at opposition with how to caretake. When you're resting, when you're being vulnerable, like these are ways that you can counteract like kind of these damaging messages that we receive from very young ages around society. For example, I feel as though kind of like the living in such a capitalist society, we have a lot of emphasis on success in a financial way. We feel prideful when our Google calendars are stocked full for the
day.
We feel like we can brag about it to our friends, like, yeah, I had 17 meetings today and I only slept 3 hours. And then tomorrow I'm going to go fly to blah, blah, blah. So we really get kind of addicted to being able to talk about how busy we are and how consumed we are with productivity. And so that feels really hard to contend with because, number one, that's exhausting. Like I know when I'm looking at my calendar and I have a full day, I already know that my shoulders are going to be hunched up and I'm kind of bracing myself for impact. And at the same time, even though that feels exhausting, if I have a few hours of break, I feel sometimes this overwhelming sense of guilt. I feel like I don't get to have that. Or if I had an hour off, then I should definitely go work out, or I should go, you know, make dinner, or I should whatever. So there's all this shoulds that come in. So I think it's about, if you are taking that time to take care of yourself, to acknowledge that you want to just like lay down like a starfish on the floor for that hour instead of booking something else in, that's resilient because it goes so counter to how we have been taught to engage with the world of productivity.
Yeah, it's like productivity equals value. I discuss this with my friends all the time because it's a daily struggle, isn't it? I teach these things as well, and I still have to remind myself every single day it is not a waste of time to go lay there and do some gentle stretching or to go meditate or to take a long bath. It is an activity that has just as much value as cleaning the stove or washing my sheets or anything else that I have on my list to do that day. And sometimes I struggle to see those as equal in value, and it's hard to remind myself. And I'm sure a lot of other people feel that way too.
It's so hard, right? Because we just feel like we need to fill up our calendar and we need to feel like we earn rest. Like I think I work with a lot of folks who feel like, well, you know, I sometimes feel like I need to, I must work out and I must go to the grocery store. I must do all of these things before I can take a shower. And it's just like, it feels like you have to earn it. Or I don't get to take a nap because I slept for 8 hours last night. And so there's all of this kind of like shaming experience that goes into it. And so it feels really hard to make the space. So I like to try and frame things as like rest is active. Because it feels so challenging to do, a lot of people are like, well, I don't want to just rest or meditate because then I'll just never do anything ever again. And like, no, because you feel so, because rest feels in such opposition to what you would normally do. If you try and consider this as an active act of resilience, then like you are doing something in your rest and you're actually doing something that allows you to show up more fully for yourself and for others. So even if it's challenging, like kind of trying to consider like you deserve the rest, and B, like your rest is recovery and it's resilient.
Absolutely. It's almost like we have this invisible equation in our heads that needs to be reframed and recalibrated of this many productive activities equals I can be rewarded with this much rest, rather than, okay, I have a set amount of time. One of the activities that's important to me is cultivating resilience, and part of that is resting however I want to rest. I love that way of looking at it. So, shifting topics a little bit, another area that you see a lot of clients in and that you help people with is relationships and sex. And I want to talk about both, but let's go ahead and start with relationships. In chronic pain, when one partner in the relationship is experiencing pain for a period of months or years or decades, particularly if the pain started halfway into the relationship and there was sort of a different vibe before, it can be a really big challenge for couples to adjust and overcome. What are some of the biggest obstacles you see coming up in these situations? And what advice do you have for people in overcoming them in those relationships?
Yeah, that was a great question. So I think that one of the biggest obstacles is the loss of connection. I think that we, or some folks are incredibly like physical, and with chronic pain, sometimes you don't want to be touched. You don't even sometimes want to look in the mirror. So it feels really hard to connect with yourself because there is that loss of identity that we talked about a little bit ago. So when it comes to partnership, when it comes to relationship, then we definitely feel a little bit more isolated. I think we feel guilty that we're not showing up as our former self, or for example, like the person that they married. And so we feel guilty about that. And so we double down on ourselves and are like, okay, well, now that person will leave me, or maybe they should leave me. And so I think that it really impacts interpersonal relationships because you start to undervalue yourself. You start to feel like there's not as much of a worthiness. And I think and that the partner of the person who experiences chronic pain might feel helplessness, you know, really wanting your partner to feel good and cared for, and also feeling like you have no idea how to do that. So I think it kind of can be this relationship where things feel really challenging to connect. And in the same way that we feel like a pressure to be productive, we feel a pressure to get better and to get better really, really quickly so that we can just get back to normal, right? We can get back to making 3 meals a day and working out and doing all of the things in the relationship. And so you want to get back to that as quickly as possible. And that in between time feels kind of intolerable. So I think that having conversations about it, where you're building awareness for each person's experience, not only the person who's in pain, but for the person who has to do maybe more of a caretaking role, and just constantly checking in with each other, like letting each other know that, like, how you're feeling, what's challenging about it, and allowing there to be space made for that. That doesn't have to be the end of a relationship. I think sometimes when like these topics are broached, then people are like, okay, we're talking about things that don't feel good. That's like slippery slope to the end of the relationship, when it can just be a check-in.
Yeah. Do you have any specific exercises or strategies that you recommend for kind of reigniting that connection, or at least starting to get some of those more vulnerable feelings out about what each person's experience is like for them?
Mm-hmm. I love that. I think that having like some tangible tools feels really helpful. So one, I think one of my favorites, which is also can sound a little bit weird or awkward, is like, how much time are you spending looking at each other? Like, how much time do you spend creating eye contact? Sometimes if you're in chronic pain, you don't necessarily want to be touched. Maybe you do, but I think it's kind of building and reinforcing intimacy, especially when that doesn't feel accessible. A great way to do that is to like spend some time just like looking at each other's eyes. And I mean, I'm even noticing as I say that, I'm like, ooh, that's like kind of weird and felt vulnerable. But it's a great way for you to just feel seen and for you to see somebody else. I think other ways to kind of create that are to be intentional about check-in times. Even if you have like a set time where you're like, on Wednesdays at noon, we have like a 30-minute talk where we're just connecting about how we feel about this topic in particular. Because I think that allows you to be reflective on like how things have changed from week to week, and also allows you for the space to communicate with your partner. Because sometimes just days and weeks and months go by and we have this assumption about how our partner is feeling and what they're experiencing. And if we can be like, all right, we're checking in about it more intentionally, I don't have to have the anxiety around like, when is going to be the right time to bring this up? Or it's been like this for months and I haven't said anything. Is it too late? You're being consistent and intentional about that time. That's a really great way to kind of counteract that.
Yeah. So, I mean, this sounds like all of this advice would also apply to my next topic as well, which is navigating the challenges of a sex life when you are experiencing chronic pain. This is something that comes up really, really often in the Curable Facebook community, because it's a real struggle and people have nowhere to share and nowhere to talk about it and nowhere to get advice. And I think that it can feel very lonely and isolating. But it's a fact of the chronic pain experience that, like you said, oftentimes the desire to be touched and therefore the desire to be intimate with your partner goes away and maybe doesn't return for quite some time. So what advice do you have for folks who are dealing with that sort of situation right now?
Absolutely. Well, I think that a big thing to talk about is that there is so much shame around talking about sex in general. So making the space to talk about it is a great first step. And then also kind of just acknowledging if you're in pain, like that part of your experience kind of eclipses everything else. So if you've had, you know, neck pain for 10 years or back pain for 5 years or pelvic floor pain for 20, then that becomes like the predominant experience of your body. So you just experience your body as the source of pain and not a source of pleasure. And so inviting in moments of pleasure are really, really powerful in showing your brain and your body that, hey, like, what else is here? I'm not just like this pain, like being of pain. I'm capable of pleasure and excitement and joy and arousal. So I think it's first giving yourself permission to acknowledge that feeling pleasure in your body is actually a really great way to attend to the healing process of chronic pain, because it's at opposition with pain, or sometimes it walks that fine line. So being intimate is not something to fear. It actually can be something that's really supportive in your healing process. So allowing maybe soft, gentle touches is, if that feels more accessible, inviting that in with your partner and saying like, I know maybe we used to have sex this way, but now I think that we need to have it this way. Maybe we need a new position. Maybe we need a new toy. Maybe we need to have like some massage oil. And can we be creative with how we're being erotic with one another? I think that's, and it also can be really fun, especially for long-term relationships with or without chronic pain. There might be some kind of routine that you get into around sex. So switching it up and figuring out different parts of your body that can feel aroused and stimulated is a really exciting journey to partake in with your partner or partners.
Yeah, I think that's great advice about just teaching your body that pleasure is possible. It doesn't mean that it's this all or nothing. I think that's what can get so scary for people, is they think that they need to jump from not being touched to going back to a regular sex life. And that doesn't need to be true. And I think a period of cultivating pleasure in your body and all these other different ways in your life, and then kind of easing into things, is a much more approachable way to do it.
Absolutely. And I think that one of my favorite ways to kind of conceptualize of reintroducing sex or intimacy is to just acknowledge that like our sex doesn't have to look like penis and vagina penetration. It just doesn't. Like, we get to have things look as creative as we want to. We get to use different parts of our body. So even maybe there might be a lot of fear around intercourse or penetration. So even like taking that off the table initially. So you're just like, okay, like, let's just table that for right now, but let's see how else we can get involved with our bodies. Like, maybe behind my knees feels really good to be stroked lightly with a feather. Maybe it feels good to pour an ice cube or something and just run it along my forearm or something like that, so that you can be like, my body is capable of pleasure and arousal, and it doesn't have to look like intercourse. It might look like making out. Might look like a massage. It might, you know, be something else. So really creating like an expansive menu of what the intimacy can look like a Cheesecake Factory style menu.
I like that. You could even brainstorm and make a whole Cheesecake Factory long list of ideas.
That's amazing. Yeah, making a menu, right?
Yes. I think we just figured out everyone's new favorite exercise.
I think we did too.
Yeah. Well, Camille, this has been extremely informative and insightful. I feel like people are going to leave here with a lot of actionable steps that they can start taking on their healing journey. Do you have any final words of advice for those who are maybe at the beginning of their journey or in the middle and struggling quite a bit right now?
Mm-hmm. I think that I would just like to share that, like, wherever you are is perfectly okay. It might feel really daunting and really scary, and it might feel like you might never get better, but it is okay to be where you are and to seek support. You're worthy of support. You're worthy of being checked in on. You're worthy of setting boundaries. And all of this will lead to your healing. So allow yourself to kind of take center stage in this. I think a lot of folks who suffer from chronic pain, and kind of getting back to what we were talking about earlier with people with marginalized identities, I think people pleasing comes in a lot, where you feel like you aren't allowed to speak up or your voice doesn't deserve to be heard. So centralizing your experience in this moment allows you to be seen. And when you feel seen, you can feel safer. So wherever you are is okay. And I hope that you get the support that you need.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Camille.
You're welcome. Of course, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. I had so much fun.
Thanks for listening to Like Mind, Like Body. If you are interested in working with Camille, then you are in luck, as she is currently accepting new clients. You can contact her to find more information through her website, CamilleLewis.com. That's CamilleLewis.com. You can also get in touch with Camille on Instagram at Camille.Lewis. Again, CamilleLewis. And if you're looking for more education about pain or exercises that you can do at home, don't forget to check out the Curable app for free at curablehealth.com. Thanks for listening. That's all.